Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and everyone at ISF, Incredibly Strange Films. This is Carl, and tonight we're going to have our first filmmakers podcast. And with us tonight is Peter O'Neilio. Say hello, Peter, and introduce your guest.
Hello, I'm Peter O'Neilio. I wrote and directed Idle Hours, and I'm with co-producer and co-star Joey Kendrick.
Hello.
Greetings, guys. So before we start, I just wanted to say something. The way this will work is we'll do the podcast, and then probably by tomorrow I'll have it up again on ISF with a link to your film. And for everyone that listens to this and sees the link and watches the movie, a couple things to keep in mind. One, these guys made a movie and you didn't. Seriously, that's a big deal. And if you take a look at the film and like it or don't like it, you know, and you comment on it, I'll be looking for those comments. If they're mean and that sort of thing, they will be taken out, and you will get muted. These guys did something really special, and let's be aware of that. Okay, so tell us a little bit about how this all started, you know, in terms of how did you get the idea, you know, what your influences are, and so on and so forth.
Peter, you want to start? I think I got the initial idea maybe 9 years ago when I was 21, and it was sort of like one of those existential crises things. And I came up with, you know, just a young person trying to figure out what's going on. And I wrote maybe like 12 pages and sat on it for like 5 years. And then just over that time, you kind of accumulate little ideas and stories, and I just put those aside. And then those questions and experiences about, you know, growing up kind of came together. And it was kind of really about maybe not coming to conclusions about your 20s, but about just posing the questions in the right way. And I feel like it's a complete question, I suppose.
Yeah. You know, it's terms of like those existential movies like Richard Linklater does. That's what it reminded me of. Stuff like Slacker and what's the other one he did? I can never remember it.
Suburbia.
Dazed and Confused. I don't know if you know those films, but it did remind me of those particularly.
Yeah.
Another one, Suburbia.
Yeah, when me and Joey moved in together, those were some of the films that we watched. That and Permanent Vacation, Jim Jarmusch's movie, and also
right.
Moonlight was a big influence, and I kind of wanted those movies to, those were at least something to look at to kind of orient our minds when we were making it.
Okay, good. So I did pick that up from it because, yeah that's what it seemed to me, you know. It's all about sort of the, I hate to use this word, but the sort of boredom or ennui that you don't know where to go and you're sort of like stuck and you've got to make a move, but you don't know what to do sort of thing,
yeah.
You know, at that age.
Yeah.
And trust
I
me,
think
I
that'd be a good
frame
of reference.
I'm sorry, I talked over you. Go ahead.
Oh, I just said I think that'd be a good frame of reference for, yeah, our viewers.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you wrote the script over a number of years. When did you finish the script and then start thinking about filming and that sort of thing? How did that work out?
I only had about like 20 pages, which was the Anna storyline, up until 2016, and then I kind of had an epiphany for the Aaron and Derek storyline, and then the Clancy storyline, which was really a part of Anna's storyline, but it needed to be a different character because they kind of go through slightly different experiences. And then I wrote it in maybe about a month, and I had the first draft of it. Then it was called Living Room. And then over the next year or so, I tried putting it together. And I was living in Denver at the time, and I was going to the Colorado Film School. I only went there for a couple of semesters. And I didn't really have a very good experience there, so I just worked for about a year, saved up money to make it. And then I came back out to Kansas, and I got the Anna storyline done. And then for about a year, I wasn't able to do any more work on it. And then a mutual friend of Joey and I suggested that we get together. And so me and Joey moved in and got a place here in Lawrence. And that's what we've been doing this past year, is finishing it.
Okay. So of course, now you have a script. You're in Lawrence, Kansas. How did you budget the film, and how did you do all the, like, location work and you know, what was all entailed there?
Well, as far as budgeting goes, it was kind of whatever was in the bank account at the time. I saved the initial budget was like $7,000, but maybe like $1,000 of that went into the movie. The rest was like to live on, and then maybe there might be $1,000 or $1,500 on screen, but maybe $6,000 to $8,000 total, with the rest going to equipment. So we didn't do any fundraising or anything like that. We just kind of used what we had. I mean, we did everything ourselves, so we didn't really. I might have slipped maybe $150 total to actors, which we just kind of asked around to see who wanted to be in a movie, and whoever said yes ended up in the movie.
That was the good thing about Kansas.
Okay.
Not a lot of movies and stuff being made around here, so everybody's kind of willing to do it for free. So
I will the people we got were right for those parts. Mm-hmm. I think we just lucked out with getting the people that we got.
Well, I'll get to the casting, because I was actually impressed with a couple of them. You know, certainly when you're doing something on low budget like this, and you're relegated to local talent and friends and things like that, it can be a little iffy as far as that. But I actually thought numerous of the people did quite well, and we'll get to that momentarily. I had a question as far as, okay, so you're shooting. How are you feeding people? Did you go to restaurants and, like, ask them for breaks or anything like that? Or what did you do along those lines? Or, like, shooting?
Well, like, we really didn't have to feed them all that much. Like, there was maybe a couple of times where I was like, I mean, you've seen there are usually never more than three people at the most in a scene. And so we would just get them for a couple of hours, shoot their stuff. There was maybe two or three times where if we had to shoot for like 6 hours, I would buy their lunch.
Okay.
And so there was no craft service or anything like that.
Okay. And so the other thing too was locations. Did you get permits, or you just went and shot, or how did you do that? Most of
I've
it
never
is
gotten
outside
a permit
anyway.
In my life.
Except the driving permit, hopefully.
I mean, there were some of the places we just like showed up and did it. Like, we needed the bar scene, and that was the beer garden of one of the places here, and it was closed during COVID, so we just kind of walked back there. But it was sort of lucky because the guy who plays Bart happened to know the owners, so they kind of showed up and he just talked to them.
Ah, good. Always good to have something like that.
Yeah, so that was the movie gods were with us there. But for most, like, a lot of, like, the gas station, when the girl is in there and whenever she is working in the clothing store, we just went in and asked if we could just shoot. And they're like, sure. So, like, we would pretty much just show up right before and ask if we could shoot there.
Okay, so that, you know, again, I'm going through this with you so that our listeners and those people that want to make a movie understand some of the processes and things like that. So, yeah, that's mm-hmm. certainly a way to do it. Let me ask you this. What did you shoot the film on? How did you get your equipment? What did you use?
So, I shot on a Canon Rebel, a T5i, and that was 700 back in, like, 2015 is when I bought it. So I just lobbed everyone, like lavalier mics. I had a Goya, which was maybe $300, and then I had a Tascam with a couple of Sennheiser mics, but I never used those for on-location shootings. I would just lob people up, because I was also running the camera and mm-hmm. also doing the lighting generally. And so it's a really easy way to get decent sound. And I would only use the boom mic for kind of detail work, like getting fill and maybe redoing some lines afterwards. But I maybe used the boom mic once or twice in the whole process. Loft mic is your best friend if you're doing a very stripped down production.
Okay. Good. So now let's get to the cast. You mm-hmm. mentioned this to a certain degree, but did you have auditions? Did was it just a matter of knowing people or how did that all work out and how long did that take to get the right people in the film?
Well, it took from 2018, summer of 2018 to now. So whenever I started, I had a different person helping me, and I got through the Anna storyline, but that collaboration kind of fizzled out. So that's why it kind of took a year or two for me and Joey to get together. But we did hold auditions whenever I was doing the Anna storyline, and mm-hmm. I don't think anyone came out of that. It was mainly just asking around people I knew and she knew, and because we were doing it in Arkansas City, Kansas, and we kind of knew a lot of people there. Like we both went to school there. Like the little kid is my nephew. I wrote that part for him, so like he is that person in real life. So it was sort of the people that I wrote some of the people I knew into it, and. As far as the Clancy storyline and the Aaron and Derek storyline, we cast that all out of Lawrence and some of the kids. We posted on the KU acting site, Kansas City acting site, Wichita. So we just sort of, and just asking around, some of the people brought their friends on, and we got casting that way. The elderly lady, whenever I was looking for her, she was actually a friend of my landlord's at the apartment I was living at the time, and she would take swimming classes at the Y with her. And so she was like, oh, I know this. She was in, did a lot of college theater and taught theater classes
Okay. Good. So... Now we're at, so tell us about the actors and the whole, you know, storylines and let's get your your friend in on this and so on and so forth, your co-star. And mm-hmm. let's talk about the movie itself and what you wanted to do with it and so on and so forth and what the basic storylines are.
Okay. Okay. Well, I guess the best way I can kind of explain that is I think for me there is an underlying emotional theme through it, and it's not necessarily a plot-driven film, and I think that alienates a lot of viewers, at least from some feedback I've gotten on it, because it mm-hmm. a lot of the storylines kind of fall apart. But for me, there is an emotional narrative going on that holds up, and I think for the people it does resonate with, they really like it. So the different storylines are really trying to carry emotional value and not necessarily the satisfaction of resolving a specific plot.
Okay. So let me put this another way. If you're trying to get distribution for the film and you're doing a pitch to someone to say that this is worth, you know, picking up for distribution, and they're asking you to give a specific description of the film in, let's say, 50 words or less, what would you say?
Okay. The way we've kind of been describing it is an anti-coming-of-age story. All of these characters are probably in their early mid-20s, and all of them have come to a considerable roadblock in their lives. And rather than kind of like your traditional hero story of overcoming the task, they kind of just meander through it. And
okay.
It's more of the... It's kind of like just about flailing through life and how sometimes that's okay. And sometimes that's kind of how you find who you are and where you need to be.
Okay.
And I feel like each character in that in the movie kind of touches on different aspects of that. Each character is stuck in this kind of small town. And so like Anna is dealing with kind of being stuck in a place. She doesn't know where to go or what to do. And so she chooses to escape. She runs away to the city to try to find herself, but ends up just doing more of the same thing, just in a new place. And she ends up coming back. Aaron and Derek instead of escaping, they choose obsessions and something just to keep them busy. And Derek chooses this weird revenge plot against somebody that, you know, beat him up one time, and kind of just magnifies it to this life or death situation that he has to destroy that person before he can keep going on. And Aaron is obsessed with a sex tape that the locals have passed around, and he chooses that as his obsession, but he finds that it doesn't quite meet up to expectations. And then Clancy's storyline is about somebody that just kind of does nothing. they've chosen the passive way of just kind of letting life roll over them. And it's more or less about people that have kind of failed at life, but, you know, have kind of kept on going, I guess.
Okay. That gives a much better idea of the film. Okay. And that's very good. Thanks for that. Okay. So now you've got you've got the film finished. Okay, you've shot it, you've scripted it, so on and so forth. What comes next? What did you have to do next?
You mean as far as like post-production?
Post-production, editing, all that sort of good stuff.
So I did all the post-production on it and all the audio for it. So I used DaVinci Resolve, and it's free download. It's everything is in the software as far as like color grading, audio mixing. So I just kind of pounded on it for two or three months.
Okay, so what's the name of this program again?
DaVinci Resolve.
Okay, DaVinci. Okay.
DaVinci Resolve, and they have it for both Mac and Apple, free download. And I mean, there are some limits.
Okay, we lost you.
Can you hear me now?
Are you back? Yeah, can hear you now.
Yeah. Okay. DaVinci Resolve, it's free. Pretty much anything you could want to do is on there. It has even special effects stuff like chroma key, pretty basic. So, yeah, if you're doing everything on the cheap, I would definitely recommend it.
Okay, that's good. So that's as far as that's editing and everything on that. So now, now you have a finished film. What was the choices with music, and how did you do that?
So pretty much all of the music is like not mine, because the idea behind making this particular movie is it really was not designed to be like distributed, because I'm sure most of the if we were to add up what all that music costs, it would probably be the budget of an actual like multi-million dollar movie. So it's supposed to be more of a showpiece. It's supposed to be a showpiece, and hopefully I can get some good views, and someone might be interested in giving me money to make a bigger budget movie. So this is sort of what I can do with basic resources and some good music.
Okay. So now that you've had it out, how have you promoted it? I know certainly ISF is one. What else have you done as far as promotion? Have you taken it to other places and perhaps use it as a calling card to try to get another film going? How is that working?
So we haven't entered it into any film festivals. We're going to switch out the music with some non-copyrighted stuff, but I have sent it to I still have sent it to distribution companies, and I did get one of the acquisitions consultants for a company that did like it and wants to do an article about it. So we're hoping that'll come out soon.
And we have gotten some local showings at some of the coffee shops and stuff around town just to kind of drum up like local attention. It's been kind of difficult due to, COVID and everything, but we have drummed up a bit of attention like locally. So that's kind of cool. And since it's a local movie, people kind of are interested in it a bit more. So that's one way try to promote it.
Yeah, for sure. Now, so how do you guys feel now that it's over? Is it just relief, or are you emboldened to go on to another project and you have all this energy, or are you just sort of like, how are you guys feeling about it?
I was all of those. I was glad it was over. And kind of, I definitely was, there was a decompression period where it's like I don't have to worry about this anymore, but I am working on a couple of new scripts right now, so we would both like to have another within a year made, but my next idea is going to be a lot more, even more stripped down than this one, so we could finish it in a shorter frame of time.
Yeah, and I'm excited too. It was just kind of nice to get it done after a kind of a real rough year of getting it put together, but it kind of makes all the struggles worth it once you watch it in the end, and it's kind of just a testament unto itself just to say that you made a film on like less than $8,000, and I don't know, it's pretty good. Pretty good feeling.
Well, good. Well, one of the things, you know, before we get, as I said, we're going to get into a little segment called the Critical Corner, but one of the things I do want to mention, in doing the ISF podcast, I've been doing podcasts for a number of years, and I've got a lot of contacts, and those contacts are generally independent directors and producers and things like that, and we have a whole list of people. Now, one person, I'm going to give you a name, and you tell me if you've ever heard the name before. The name is Mark Pirro. You ever heard of Mark Pirro?
No, we haven't.
Okay, so Mark is a guy that's up, I think he's in Michigan, if I'm not mistaken. But Mark is the low-budget, low-brow king, comedy king. And he does films for absolutely nothing. And actually did a film for only $100.
Oh, wow.
And we did a podcast with him. And this is someone I would suggest very strongly you listen to this podcast. Mark did films like Death Row Game Show, and he did Polish Vampire in Burbank. And my favorite is Rec Tuma, which is a kaiju film, and you can figure it out. Rec Tuma, a giant asshole. But Mark, one of the things that Mark says is, no matter what, shoot your movie. Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter how much money you have it. If you have that passion, you need to shoot it and you need to get it done. Don't stop. Mm-hmm. Don't do anything. Just keep going. And that's one of the things that I think I would say to you guys. Another thing, too. One of the podcasts we did was with an ISF member by the name of Craig Ahrens, partner, who is Dan Espinosa, and they did a film called The Evil Down the Street, and this is also in the podcast series. But one of the things that all these guys say is start pulling together a family of people who want to work with you. Okay? And so let's say you've got a new project. Okay?
Yeah.
And this is no longer going to be a work print. This is going to be something that you're going to need music for. I have a question for you. Where would you find a composer locally? What would you do?
Are there any? I'm sure there's probably a couple of Facebook pages we could post to. Lawrence is a rather artsy town, so.
Oh, for music.
Yeah,
I've actually got a few contacts now. I'm working on a small independent game with a friend out of Seattle, and we've kind of just gone through friends of friends and just seeing who's interested in like the arts and stuff and who has free time. And,
okay, so let me stop you here and just say, okay, if that's the question, you know what you do? The first thing is you've got Kansas University there.
That's true.
Go to the music department.
Mm-hmm.
Find students, find faculty. If that doesn't work, if you want a more classical soundtrack, then go to go to churches, talk to the organists. Because trust me, being an organist here in New York, there are people that compose like crazy. Okay,
oh, really?
Or if you're looking for a rock band, find the local rock bands. See, this is the thing you can do. It's the same with casting, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you're looking, if you're really looking for casting, go to the drama departments. Go to the local theater. All those type of things. You know, the thing is, the beauty of local production is that no matter how small a place is, and trust me, I was in a very small place in Bradford, Pennsylvania, you can find people. You can find people that are motivated. The same thing, you know, one of the things, now that we get into, quote, the critical corner, there were two specific things I noticed about the film. And two of them are connected as far as tech, and that's the camera work and the lighting. Now, you are limited in what you had to do. Okay, that's very understandable. Okay, you were doing everything. So we're going to find somebody who knows about lighting that can help you, that can be a partner. You know, those are the things you want to start really looking at, is to expanding your base and your talent base. Okay? And that's one thing. The other thing is there's one other podcast you need to listen to, and it was one I did yesterday.
Okay.
So it's number 9A. And so yesterday I had Keith Lansdale on. Keith did a film called The Pale Door, and he's the writer of it. Now, he is the son of Joe Lansdale. Do you know who Joe Lansdale is?
No, we don't.
Okay, so Joe Lansdale is an author, primarily, at least at the beginning of his career, a horror author. He's the person who wrote the short story and the screenplay for Bubba Hotep. He also did Cold in July. He did all the Happ and Leonard, a series of books, and that was made into a series on Sundance. And I've known Joe for a while, okay. And I saw this thing, but they both talk about scripts. And the one thing is, I understand what you were trying to do with the script, but the one thing is, it really didn't have intention. There wasn't.
Okay.
Do you understand what I mean? It's like intention are the arrows that point toward the end, that something is inevitable, right? And that also has to do with character development and things like that. And that's a particular episode I would suggest that because they also talk about the production and so on and so forth. Now, of course, they're dealing with a lot more money than you are. But nonetheless, you get an idea of the process. But they're particularly good with the scripts. And the other thing is that Keith is particularly good in terms of he also has comic books that he's been doing for years. So he also thinks visually, too. So,
cool.
As far as the critical corner, that's all I got to say, which considering, this is a whole heck of a lot. To be, you know, it took me a little while to get into the feel of the film. I had to go through it twice. But I got what you were going for. And that's why at the beginning I was saying things like Slacker and all those movies that we mentioned at the beginning. And so, you know what, guys? Y'all have to be damn proud of what you did. Seriously.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it. And for having watched it three times, I think those are valid points for sure.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, and you know what, guys? If anyone says it sucks, you know, give them the middle finger.
Oh, they have. They have.
Good. Good for you.
Yeah.
Tell us about it.
We've had some. I mean, I'm not going to say who it was, but one of the prominent actors in it was rather angry with me because they were like, they didn't really understand it. And then they were like, you know I didn't read the script, but I just thought it was like, not that. And I was like, I mean, sorry, but that it is what it is. And he was like, I didn't understand the Anna storyline. Why is it there? And so,
something I just kept telling Peter was, as long as we get an emotional reaction out of somebody, rather it's, you know, happy or just anger or they hated it, like, as long as we got an emotional reaction out of somebody, I think we were successful.
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree with that. I would agree with that. And also remember that an audience member, it's all personal. You know, you put it out there and it's their reaction to what you've put out. And mm-hmm. and you have to realize that those reactions can run the gamut. And so, you know, you take a look at things and you step back, you look at it, hopefully critically, and then you make adjustments, you go on to the next project. And mm-hmm. I'm all for seeing your next project, Gus. No question.
Well,
thanks.
Well, cool. You will be the first person we send it to after it's done.
Okay. Fair enough. And listen, good luck with everything, guys. Seriously. So to finish up, why don't you do one more plug for it and give us an idea of what comes next.
Okay. Well, Idle Hours, it is... I've described it as an art house coming of age story. And I don't know what, do you have anything, Joey?
No.
And my, if I do the next project that I'm working on, it's going to be even more, it's going to be even more hard to understand. It's going to be more challenging. It's going to piss off a lot more people, but people that plug into it are going to love it just as much if you like Idle Hours. So more dreaminess to it. So, yeah.
Okay. And Joey, what do you have to add? Do you have anything
I'd say,
to add to that, Joey?
I would say if you're interested in art house films, odd character studies, small town life, and just really odd movies, I think Idle Hours will be for you. It's free to watch. And it's got some pretty kick-ass music, so.
Yeah, and we did mention that very briefly, that if you try to get it distributed, it's not going to be distributed. And to be honest, if YouTube finds out all that music is on that movie, it's off YouTube. I swear to God, so be careful.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We had this talk already.
Yeah.
So, one other thing before we go, too, and it's a recommendation. One of our members is a gentleman by the name of Joe Badon. Joe has done a couple films, and he just came out with a film called Sister Tempest. This was, I think, our third podcast that we did on ISF. And if you want to see something off the radar, what the fuck strange,
okay.
I recommend it highly. Because I have a sneaky suspicion you won't go as far as Joe, but you might you might find it really interesting to watch. It's called Sister Tempest. And that's another thing. And everybody that's listening, you guys too, I have to do a pitch here. We are now at over 10 episodes of the podcast for ISF. You go to the announcements page. You go to where it says all the ISF podcasts are in the comments. Go listen. Because anyone that's trying to make their first film, anyone that has any interest at all, one of the reasons we're doing this is to specifically help you, give you an idea of what needs to be done and different viewpoints. And some won't be, you know, some will say one thing, some will say another. And you have to come up with what you think is right. You know, you guys just made a 90-minute movie about ennui. I have a friend of mine who will be on the podcast in probably November, a guy by the name of Dan Kramer. I went to the premiere of his film in New York, done on a micro budget of I think he did it for $30,000, 3-hour movie based on a 1700 or late 1700 novel.
Oh, wow.
3 hours. Okay, it
that
can be done. Oh, it is. It's called Overwhelm the Sky, and I would recommend it highly because it was all done in black and white, and it's friggin' gorgeous.
Oh, wow.
All
right. I'm convinced.
Okay, but guys, keep doing what you're doing. Don't stop.
Oh, for sure.
And don't let people like me stop you either. You guys did a good job, and keep working at it, all right?
All right, well,
awesome.
Well, thank you very much, Carl.
Okay, fair enough, guys. Well, listen, you take care and keep me informed about what you're planning to do, and we'll keep helping plug you, no question at all, guys.
Okay, that sounds good, man.
Thanks for having us on.
Oh, you're very, very welcome. Guys, have a good night.
All right, you too, man.
You too. Thanks.
Okay.
Okay.
So to end
Bye.
Up here, just to let everyone know what's going on with ISF and Deviate Legion, we are going to be on Friday. Well, let's see. This is Friday. On Sunday, Danae will have her show, and that's going to be on Korean Horror. On Tuesday, we have a new show called Terror with a Twist of Lines. And his guest will be Amy, who will probably end up to be his co-host. And I'll be producing that. And we'll be talking about the films of John Carpenter. We will have a guest to call in, Troy or someone at WK Books, because they just published a new book by Troy Howard, who was on a couple weeks ago. And he did a book on John Carpenter. So that's on Tuesday. On Wednesday, Adam will be doing Cathode Ray Mission. That particular show is going to be on Scorsese, Martin Scorsese and his films. And then a week from today, it's going to be a very special podcast, and it's going to be very, very difficult for me because it's a memorial to a friend of mine that passed away, Antonia Onofro. And Antonia was someone in the punk community in Reno, and we got to know each other on Facebook, and we became very close, and I always called her my cousin. And she passed away about a month ago from kidney failure. So we're going to do a very special memorial to her on next Friday. So that's what we have planned on Deviant Legion. We want to thank everyone for listening. And again, please go to the ISF podcast on the announcement page of Incredibly Strange Films, or go to Blog Talk and search it there, and you'll find all of them there. And please listen, because it's a really good series. And again, thank you very much for listening. And thanks very much to Peter and Joey for being on. And do watch Idle Hours. Okay? Thank you very much for listening, and good night to you.